Welcome back to Escape to the Magic Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Randy.
I'm Dak.
And this is Ryan.
And this week, we are discussing the Mount Rushmore of Disney music. Greatest composers. What do you think of that?
Guys, I'm super excited about this topic. I know it's not your run-of-the-mill Disney World, Disneyland tips and tricks and being in the parks, but I think music is one of those things that just invokes memories and emotions and just touches us all in a way that is so phenomenal. I just love that. And Disney, I think, more so than, at least more so for me, is about music, right? Like, it just, to me, even from the very beginning stages of Disney, he wanted to incorporate music and sound into his films and shows and cartoons. And so I think that has just been a tradition that has carried on with Disney.
Yeah.
That I absolutely love.
Well, let me ask you a question. Can you imagine the Disney parks without music?
No.
I mean, we live here in Houston. Do you remember the music from Astroworld?
No.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. But like you said, I mean, music is just, it invokes so much emotion and memory. And we tie, I know for me personally, I look back and I can tie specific times in my life visiting the parks where music, it was such a big part of that. So when I hear things, when I hear different music, oh yeah, I remember that time I was at Disney with my family. I remember when I was there and this happened and this song was playing. I think unlike anything else, music just plays such a huge role at the parks.
You know, it's interesting. You know, we talk about Disney's levels of detail, right? And kind of the carry forward of what Imagineers, the expectation on how they design to those different levels of detail. And music's not one of them per se, but it's part of the equation, I think, that augments all of the rest of it, right? Yeah. Because when you look at, when you've got your sight and your touch and the texture and all that other stuff, the color, you know, when you add that music into it, it brings that extra little bit of magic that makes it more real than just some, you know, 3D sculpture or door or whatever it's going to be. It's part of the emotional attachment that you'll start to have there. And then the association in the future, right, that you come back to it. I mean, you think about it, and we'll discuss a little bit of it. I mean, primarily, we're going to talk a lot, I think, about how it's influenced park culture, right? And that can't go understated, because when you think of, sometimes you watch some of the movies, you listen to some of the songs, it's hard not to associate those songs also with times that you've been in the park. And then vice versa. When you're in the park and you hear the song, it's hard to not associate it with times when you were watching the movies.
Yeah, and I think it's easy, Dak, like you said, I think it's easy to dismiss this topic, you know, for our episode today. But, you know, as I kind of got into the research here, because I, you know, and I was kind of explaining this beforehand, like, I love the Disney parks music, but did not really know much about the composers behind the music. Now, I knew their names, did not know necessarily a lot of their works and how much, like, literally how much influence they have had with the music in the park. So I'm excited to see where this is going to go, Dak.
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and get into it then. Let's just jump right in. So what I thought I would do, and I've composed a list here of several names that I think are cut above a lot of the composers that have worked for Disney over time. These are like your upper echelon, in my opinion. Still a pretty lengthy list, in my opinion, but just some big hitters. So first one that I have coming out of the gate is Randy Newman. Randy Newman, if you remember, he's done basically all of the Toy Stories. So he's been connected with Pixar from the very beginning. So all of the Toy Stories, A Bug's Life, Monsters, Inc., and Monsters, U., all of the Cars movies, and Princess and the Frogs. Or Princess and the Frog, not multiple frogs.
Yeah, there's only one frog in that movie.
Yeah. So here's a little cut of Randy Newman.
You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me.
All right, you got a friend in me.
You got a friend in me. So again, in my opinion, you can't say enough good things about Randy Newman, who he is, and what he brought to the table as far as Disney music is concerned. I mean, I don't think you can go through the parks today or hear You Got a Friend in Me and not think about Toy Story.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's totally fair. And, you know, obviously, that's more than one movie. That's a franchise, right? What are there, five? Four? Four.
Number five is coming out.
Number five is coming out,
four,
right?
Four and five on the way, yep.
Yeah. So, you know, it's spun a franchise of movies. There's all sorts of other associations. It's got its own dedicated land at Hollywood Studios, right? Including in that land now even a full-service advanced dining reservation restaurant. I mean, that's everything. But I think this is what's so iconic about the whole thing. You know, you go to Toy Story Land in Hollywood Studios, and you are now in Andy's backyard. And so the decor, the, you know, everything around you is enlarged to a degree where you feel like you're one of the tiny little toys that are walking around. And then all of a sudden, you see those toys literally walking around, right? I mean, think about the Green Army Men.
Yeah.
And they're out there and they're marching along, right? And they're like a drum line. They're drumming and they're head to toe green all together. And you're part of that equation. And so later on, when you are at Magic Kingdom and you're about to watch the fireworks, and then some of Randy Newman's music pops up as part of Happily Ever After, you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it all comes together full circle.
Right on. All right, next one on our list, I have Bob and Dick Sherman. So
listen, I mean, you want to talk about the Mount Rushmore, right?
Yeah.
The Sherman Brothers, they are Disney music.
They are Disney music. Like, let me just, this is not even a smidgen of the work that they've done. So The Parent Trap, Sword in the Stone, of course, Mary Poppins, Jungle Book, the cartoon version, all of the Winnie the Pooh movies, and then inside the parks, you got the Tiki Room, Small World, Journey into Imagination, Carousel of Progress. I mean, these guys are what's up. Here's a little Sherman Brother magic. Little Mary Poppins for you.
And let's not forget Bedknobs and Broomsticks. And for the, I mean, this
that
is
was one of my favorite movies growing
it
up
still
as a
is.
Kid.
It still is one of my favorite movies. It's to me, it's one of those Sunday afternoon movies that, hey, we may all fall asleep to it, but it's such an easy watch.
Yeah, it is.
It's such an easy watch.
It is. You know, and I think I go back to that, that's that Sunday night thing, right? We used to do that growing up, right? It was the Sunday night thing when we'd have our Disney time. And I love that movie so much. But the Sherman Brothers' impact on culture and everything that goes throughout the whole equation, I mean, don't forget, here's something really incredible about that, right? I mean, they would perform for Walt.
Yeah.
These things, right? That would be the thing. Walt would come over to their office and gather around the piano in their office, and they would play, and vice versa. Walt had a piano in his office, and then they would have to, you know, he'd call them up and they'd come and perform for him, and it'd just go back and forth. And I just think, man, how incredible would that have been for the first time when they said, what do you think about this, Walt?
Yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine that. Like, just to be a fly on the wall in that room with the Sherman Brothers and Walt, and he's asking them to play Feed the Birds for him. And I mean, it's pretty well documented that that was one of Walt's favorite songs.
Yeah.
And so it's just, they are beyond icons. Like, they are just...
Well, and imagine having that kind of relationship with Walt where... I mean, he walks into your studio, he says, I want this, and you're like, yeah, let's put something together. And he comes back a day later, and he starts singing with you, and he just is tapping his foot. And, I mean, they had a very, very dynamic relationship with one another.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, again, so, and if you watch Saving Mr. Banks, which is one of my I want to say favorite movies, but the soundtrack is one of my most favorite soundtracks. You kind of get to see a glimpse of that relationship between the Sherman Brothers and Walt.
I highly recommend there's a docuseries on Disney Plus
that
I mean it's all about the Sherman Brothers, the whole thing, all the way beginning to end. I highly recommend it. There's some great film clips in there of their early days with Walt and things they were doing, and being able to listen firsthand, right, from you know, Alan talk about, hey, this is how we did it. This is what went on. This is how the whole thing worked. This is, you know, Walt would say this, we would do this, and the back and forth. I mean, super, super touching.
Yeah, The Boys is what it's called.
Is that what it's called? The Boys.
Yeah, The Boys. It's great.
And that's right. Because that's how Walt referred to him. He said, The Boys. Let's see what the boys have done today.
Yeah. All right. We could talk about them. They could have their own episode, but let's keep moving. The next one. Randy, you're going to have to help me on this Italian name, but I hope I'm pronouncing it Michael Giacchino.
Yeah, I mean, that's Americanized, right? You know.
So I apologize. Okay, listen, this guy is a legend in and of himself. I mean, forget the other stuff that he has done outside of Disney. These are just some of the, you know, obviously heavy Pixar influence here, but these are just some of the things he's done for Disney. Incredibles, Ratatouille, Up, John Carter, Tomorrowland, Inside Out, Star Wars Force Awakens, keeps going, Zootopia, Coco, Rogue One, Doctor Strange, all of the Spider-Mans, Thor's Love and Thunder, and Inside the Parks. I didn't know this one. He composed the music for Space Mountain at both Hong Kong and Paris.
Yeah.
The dude is phenomenal. Let's get a little Michael Giacchino.
All right. A little bit more of that, maybe. Yeah. We could use a little bit more of that. Now, this guy is amazing. And if you look at his non-Disney credits, I mean, Mission Impossible 3, Star Trek Into Darkness, Jurassic World. Dude, did you mention?
Yeah, he was the composer on all the J.J. Yeah. Abrams Star Trek movies, right? I mean, he's heavily tied to J.J. Abrams. If J.J. Abrams does something, typically Giacchino's there with him.
Did you mention Rogue One?
Rogue One,
he did,
yeah.
Rogue One,
yeah. He's,
which, in my opinion, by the way, I mean, look, and this is not shade on John Williams, but that's one of the best soundtracks.
Absolutely.
That from top to bottom, you know, out of a Star Wars film, highly underrated film in the first place, but Giacchino's the one film that I think kind of brings that really together so well.
And you know, and let's give him, I mean, in terms of age, he's considered a younger.
He's young.
He's in his mid-50s.
Yeah, he's young. That's young. Mid-50s
is young for a composer. So he's got many, many years ahead of him to continue to write for Disney. So I would say he's up there, Dak. He's up there.
Yeah, by far, he's one of the best ones. All right, let's keep moving on. The next one that I have on the list, I'm going to put these two together, but Alan Menken and Howard Ashman.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Now listen, if you're not super deep into it, maybe those names don't pop out at you, but if you are like us and you were 80s, 90s, you know, Disney animation heavy, you're going to know who these people are.
So let's just go through some of their work together. And of course, you know, Howard Ashman passed away early 90s, I believe. The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Pocahontas, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Hercules, Home on the Range, Enchanted, and Tangled.
So here's the thing about The Little Mermaid, from which that clip came, right? that started, in my opinion, what you could almost call a modern renaissance of Disney animation, right? Disney animation really went through, and I'd say Disney films in general, went through a pretty rough patch for a long time, particularly after Walt's passing.
I think, Dak, you call that the dark days of Disney animation.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I call it the dark days of animation. And then you're right. It is actually referred to as the renaissance period of Disney cartoons.
Yeah. It kicked off with Little Mermaid, right? And Howard Ashman was one of those key players in that whole thing.
Yeah,
right?
Big time. Big time. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and again, referring back to Disney Plus, there's a wonderful documentary on Howard Ashman just called Howard.
Howard.
And it's all about that story. Another great one on Disney Plus, I feel like we're plugging Disney Plus a lot today, but another great one is it's just called Waking Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah.
It is phenomenal, and it goes through that whole Renaissance period. I mean, they just kicked it off, and Disney just exploded with hit after hit after hit after hit of, you know, different cartoons. To give it some perspective, the last cartoon that came out before Little Mermaid was The Black Cauldron.
Black Cauldron, right? Yeah.
It was rough. It was really, really
And most
rough.
People say, the what?
Yeah. So, pretty amazing run that group of animators and music composers had within that. Okay,
now, so, I know Alan Menken is considered, he did receive Disney legend status more than 20 years ago. I'm assuming that Ashman did as well.
Oh, yeah.
He's a Disney legend.
Yeah, yeah. I absolutely believe so.
I don't think you could have one without the other.
No. I mean, those two.
Yeah, of course, Alan's career continued on, and he's done some amazing things, but they were hand in hand, you know, together bringing that.
And you mentioned Beauty and the Beast soundtrack, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so Beauty and the Beast, I believe, and Aladdin were two of the last shows that Howard was able to kind of put his touch on.
Yeah, and I think Aladdin in particular, at that point, he was very, very sick, right?
Yes,
and, you know, the just the physical toll of trying to come to the studio to work on things was so hard. The thing about it was, at the time, many people really didn't know what was going on in the first place. And so he was showing up very sick, putting on a very brave face. You know, his passing actually shocked people. When it happened, they had no idea what he was going through. So I definitely recommend those docuseries out there. They're just great watches. And it gives you, I think, a really greater appreciation for what I would call the gift of the music that they gave us.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's keep moving on. The next couple that I had was these guys, probably not as deep of a well, but they put out some massive hits, and that is Robert Lopez and Kristen Anderson Lopez.
Oh, you know their music.
Oh, there's some big hits in here.
Yeah, so they produced, obviously, Frozen and Frozen 2. They helped with Coco. They worked on WandaVision, and then in the parks, they helped produce the music for Finding Nemo, the musical. So here's a little... Every dad in America knows this song if they have daughters.
Let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. Let it go, let it go. Turn away and slam the door.
Look, guys, one of my favorite things to do, and I am not ashamed to admit this, is to go to the Frozen sing-along show at Hollywood Studios. I love it.
I went to it our last trip just a few weeks ago. Sang the entire time.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Why would you not go? Why would you go and not sing?
Listen, yeah. I mean,
there's a lot of embarrassed dudes in there. I can tell you, you look around, you're just like, come on, fellas, get with it. Like, we're all here together.
I see dads slumping down in their seats, and I'm like, no, I'm right next to the little 6-year-old girl in her princess dress, singing, belting out as loud as I can. I have no daughters,
so, yeah. You know.
Yeah. And then, of course, we've talked about the Frozen ride over in Epcot. Yep. Love that too.
Yeah, I sing on that one as well.
I don't
all the songs.
I don't think you can undersell how big of an impact Frozen has had on Disney, and I would say that was maybe part of the second phase.
I was literally to say this is that feels like Frozen kind of kicked off a second renaissance to a certain degree, right? I mean, we did. We went through just a little bit where everything was so Pixar heavy for a while, yes. right? The animation side was frankly not given the attention that it had seen through the 90s. And I do. I feel like that kind of kicked off this next renaissance almost, because all of a sudden it came back with an absolute fervor.
Yeah, and they call it something. It's not, man, I'm kicking myself for not having some notes here. They do call it the revival. That's what it is, okay, the revival. Sure. Yeah, whatever. They make up these names.
Yeah,
but yes, it was part of that run of Disney animation that came back, and kind of Pixar really did what Disney was doing. They took great stories, added great music, and started beating the pants off of Disney as far as entertainment was concerned, in my opinion. And Disney Animation finally stepped up and was like, okay, we gotta do this level of entertainment and storytelling as well.
Well, let's just be clear about something real fast. We are not paid by Disney.
we're actually not paid by anybody.
But we're plugging the Disney Plus today. So again, on Disney Plus, you have the documentary Into the Unknown, Making of Frozen 2.
Oh, yeah.
You get to see really behind the scenes of those two composers really working, and
yep.
the struggle that they go through to get some of those songs right. I was honestly just super amazed at the level of dedication, and I mean they were stressed out, they were anxious, they were just having a hard time, and just how they just were able to come together and get that soundtrack put together. And then to see, you know, Jennifer Lee, the director, you know, there's a scene in that documentary where she is listening to one of the recordings and she just starts to tear up because, oh, they've hit it. This is the song. This is going to be the one that all the girls sing. And, you know, again, it's hard to watch that documentary and not get a little emotional when you see what they go through to put out that level of music.
Well, and you know, the thing about it is, we talk about the pair of composers, but they're married, right?
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
They live this while they're going through that period. And for those of you that have maybe, you know, worked with a spouse in any sort of capacity, you know, there's a balancing act you got to have. When you insert emotional things with it, and I would say that music as a profession is an emotional profession, right? I can't even really imagine kind of some of those struggles you go through, especially when you maybe have a little bit of that writer's block, or you feel like you've hit a wall on something, like, what do we do? How do we go next? For them to do what they've done and to be married together still, like, I'm like, to me, that's absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, and we'll just close out with one more thought on them, and that is just that I think what they did that is hard to put your finger on, I think Alan Menken and Howard Ashman were the kings of doing this, is in the actual show itself, they move the story forward through song, right? And I think that, you know, Robert Lopez, Kristen Anderson Lopez tapped into being able to, hey, we're at this point in the story, but we need to be, you know, down the road in the story. How do we do that? Well, we take a 3.5 minute song and we progress the storyline by adding in music and putting it to music.
So real fast on that note, and I don't mean to take more time, but it was probably 7, 8, 9 years ago when we really first started going to Disney as a family. And at the time, Disney was offering this, it was like an animation class at Hollywood Studios, that if it was like a 3-hour class, it started like at 7 in the morning, and they would give you a discount on your tickets for that day if you did this class. So I took one of my daughters, I think it was Morgan, may have been Ashley, but we went to Hollywood Studios and we did this animation class, and it was fascinating, kind of behind the scenes on how they produce, you know, animated works and whatnot. And the tour guide, and you know, even though she said it, I still to this day have a hard time believing it. But then you start watching some of these documentaries on how they make, oh yeah, this makes sense. She said most of the time when they sit down to create a storyline, to create a plot, they typically will write the music first.
Yeah.
They write the music. They get the music for the most part down.
Yeah.
And then from there, they will take, okay, what's the character doing during this part of the score? What's that character doing? And it's fascinating to me that you would write the music before you even know what the story is 100% going to be.
Yeah. And I think that's what's so unique about animation in general, right? As opposed to a live action script where you've got people shooting and doing things and you know, you're blocking. Everything is very clear as to what's supposed to be happening in a given scene. You know, animation is always in flux, right? Mm-hmm. The ability to go back and change something, even if you've got just one little element, right? Like, hey, well, I want the hand to do this other thing instead. You know, there's so much more creative freedom there to go and make those sorts of changes before and after the fact. But the music is what drives the story. You know, the story and the picture you see on screen comes together as a result of the music that's driving it. And it just plays such a huge role.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next one on my list I have is Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Who?
Yes.
Never heard of him.
So, obviously some major hits here. So Hamilton, Moana, Encanto, and the live action Little Mermaid. This dude is awesome. Like, he just has a knack for putting together great music.
He's a talented guy.
Yeah. Unique style.
Yeah.
You can tell. And it's interesting, you know, that his style is having influence on many other artists as well at this point. There's been a couple of times when I've been listening or watching something and I felt like I was listening to Miranda's music there, and then you'd go and you'd find out, oh no, that's not his. In fact, when we watched Wish for the first time, I felt like I was listening to a Miranda soundtrack there, and you know, literally, I couldn't stand it. I broke the rule in the movie theater. I pulled my phone out to find out who's the composer here, right? Yeah. Because you get into that mix of singing and then a little bit of rap, right? And then you've got syncopated rhythms that are going through the song as you're both speaking and singing at the same time. Very, very unique style of music, in my opinion, but one that he pulls off with absolute brilliance.
Yeah. All right. Next one I had on my list was Thomas Newman. So Thomas Newman, nephew to Randy Newman, he's put out some amazing stuff as well. So he worked on WALL-E. Ryan, you already mentioned earlier, Saving Mr. Banks. He worked on Finding Dory and then the new one, Elemental. So here's my Thomas Newman. All right, so Thomas Newman, again, probably not that big hitter like you would some of these other names we've mentioned, but I think he put together some great stuff and kind of picked up where Randy Newman left off, right, with his influence on Pixar and those things.
Listen, I would say for me personally, I think the soundtrack to Saving Mr. Banks is one of my top five soundtracks of all time. It's on my playlist. I probably play it at least once or twice a week. It, to me, I love the movie. It just invokes a lot of emotion for me. I love his style of writing, and
I've never seen that movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Nope.
Wow.
I have no idea what it's about.
Okay. Nice. Homework assignment for this weekend.
I guess so. You've talked it up, and for the music alone, I guess I'm intrigued.
This is one of those great Sunday afternoon movies. It really is. I mean, Tom Hanks, Paul Giamatti. What's her name?
Yeah, you put me on
Emma Thompson.
Yes.
Just a fantastic cast. Ryan from The Office.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. All right, let's keep moving. We're getting so involved in all of these, you know, awesome composers. Next one I had on my list, Hans Zimmer. So, I mean, he's another one of those legends, guys. Just his Disney music. I'm not going to go into all of his other stuff that he has produced, but The Lion King live action, all of the
Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean,
yeah, all of them.
The
There you go. Enough said.
What? Yeah. Yeah. The Amazing Spider-Man. He worked on. He was involved in Avengers, Age of Ultron, Dark Phoenix, which is now Disney owned. The Simpsons movie. The guy is phenomenal. He's just, again, but going back to Pirates, I mean, that's his biggest impact on, you know, bringing it back to the parks and just what an influence that is in the park life.
Oh, and right now, I mean, his most popular soundtrack that is all over social media is the Interstellar soundtrack, which...
Yep, Interstellar. But I would, you know, not a Disney movie, but just a plug for amazing music, right? You know, the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, again, what's amazing to me about Hans Zimmer is his versatility in music creation. There are some composers where it's very identifiable. You can kind of pick it up really well, and I don't mean this as a bad thing, right? I can usually pick out John Williams' music really easy. Like there are some definitive styles that he employs into all of that. You know, you can pick that up with a lot of different people. Hans Zimmer has so many different soundtracks out there that just you would. It's just it's just
his
incredible.
Range. His
the range. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, his range of music and what he can put out there is just amazing.
Yeah.
So you brought up John Williams. He was the next guy on our list. You know, obviously didn't start out as a Disney composer, but his influence and his fingerprint is all over Disney now, right? So, of course, all of the Star Wars, Indiana Jones. Ryan, you pointed this out to me as we were driving over here today. He composed the music and created the music for Galaxy's Edge. So yep. The loop soundtrack you hear at Galaxy's Edge was all new John Williams with his own spin on it so that it would tie into, you would hear the Star Wars theme, but you would be like, well, that's not Star Wars, but it sounds very similar and familiar to it. He's just an amazing composer.
Well, and I think one thing we probably should mention is the word adaption. So we talk about movie scores and then other composers or the composers themselves will adapt the music for the parks. So that's what he did with Galaxy's Edge, is that he took basically his baseline of Star Wars music and adapted that for the parks.
And by the way, John Williams isn't done, right?
No.
Some people may or may not realize, but even the most recent Obi-Wan series, John Williams himself actually wrote the theme to it, right? Now, the rest of the score and the soundtrack, you know, I think you had Natalie Holt and William Ross in there. But John Williams wrote the Obi-Wan theme, and then they wrote all their stuff based off of the theme that John Williams did. And, I mean, he's up there at this point, right, fellas?
Yeah.
I mean, he's one of the greatest composers of our generation.
Absolutely.
Just all around.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he's 92 years old, still going strong.
Yeah, it's amazing. All right, the next one I had, this is kind of calling back to the golden days of Disney animation. George Bruns.
Yeah, not Burns. Good.
Not Burns.
You said it right.
Okay, so Sleeping Beauty, 101 Dalmatians, The Jungle Book, he also worked on with Sherman Brothers, we mentioned earlier. The Aristocats, Robin Hood, and came up with the music for Yo-Ho, A Pirate's Life for Me.
You're going to get me emotional, dude. Golly, that's one of my favorite attractions. It's one of my favorite songs. I will play that. I'll just play it in my house. It's just amazing. Amazing. So
this would be a good time to put our honorable mention in there, which I don't know how we've even gotten this far without you bringing up his name. Xavier.
It's X. X. Time for X. X.
So, of course,
Xavier Artensio.
Yeah, he worked with George to come up with the actual lyrics. So he produced the lyrics for, of course, Pirates and Haunted Mansion. Yeah. Great hand in hand, those two together.
Yep. Yep.
Well, speaking of Haunted. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, well, I'm going to hold my thought here for a second.
All right, we moving on then? Or you,
we can.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead. The next one I had on the list was Jerry Goldsmith. He worked on Mulan and then, of course, worked on Soren, which is by far, you know, Ryan, you say, you know, just want to listen to the soundtrack as it plays. I love the Soren soundtrack. Let's get a little flavor of it.
Now, do you fellas know what Jerry Goldsmith is the most famous for?
I know what he's most famous for.
What is it?
Rudy.
Nope.
Well, oh, okay. Hold up. Let me take another crack at that. Jerry Goldsmith.
Now this could be a fun little game in and of itself, right?
Because Rudy's a fantastic soundtrack.
Yeah.
I can't. Oh, I don't know.
That's what's crazy to me is like we're just pulling up the Disney accolades for some of these composers, just their depth and their length of reach on composing music is phenomenal.
I'm gonna kick myself when you mention this.
Jerry Goldsmith scored 5 of the original Star Trek movies. That is Jerry Gold. It's got to be the thing he's absolutely most famous for, right?
I didn't know that.
His mark on the music of Star Trek is just the same as John Williams, obviously, to Star Wars. Wow.
And you are a Trekkie, so
I grew up with that kind of thing. Yeah. And he and Jerry Goldsmith's a fella that some of his contemporaries included, you know, guys like Henry Mancini, right? You know, wrote the Pink Panther and other things that just said brilliance. Another one of those persons who has a huge range, but I listened to the Soren soundtrack. This is how I come and tie it full circle. I listen to the Soren soundtrack and I hear the soundtracks from those first 5 Star Trek movies, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Nice.
All right, the last one I had on my list, unless you guys want to add a couple more, was Danny Elfman. Was in the band Oingo Boingo. I don't know if you guys knew that or not.
Did not know that.
Oingo Boingo. Oingo Boingo. Thrown back to the 80s. But some of his projects, he is, you know, hand in hand with Tim Burton. So Nightmare Before Christmas. He also voiced the singing voice for Jack Skellington and then worked on Alice in Wonderland, Dumbo. All of those have, you know, that Tim Burton flair. So those two are pretty tight. Kind of like what you were saying with J.J. Abrams and Michael.
And, you know, along those lines, since I plugged Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy, Danny Elfman's the one that did Tim Burton's 1989 Batman, right? Which is probably the iconic Batman music, right? When you think of it, you literally are going to be thinking of Danny Elfman's score there for it, you know, that carried through into cartoons and all sorts of other stuff. If you go to, if you go to one of the Six Flags parks and you ride a Batman ride, you're going to hear that soundtrack in there. You know, you're not going to hear the new stuff. You're going to hear, I know, but I just want to point out, right, that's one of those things. And for us in the Disney world, really, probably the most iconic of his contributions is going to be the Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's all I had on my list, unless you guys have a few more.
I've got a few more. Go ahead, Randy.
Well, how many do you have?
I've got 3.
I have 1.
Okay.
I have 1. So you do yours.
Okay. So, yeah, I definitely wanted to mention these 3 because these 3 to me may not have the movie soundtrack to their name. Well, actually, some of them do, but you hear a lot of their music in the parks. So let me start with Buddy Baker. You ever heard of Buddy Baker, who is a Disney legend? Actually, Jerry Goldsmith was one of his students.
That's right.
At, I believe it was UCLA. But Buddy Baker, he is responsible for the Haunted Mansion music. The music there. But he also arranged, and Randy, you're going to like this.
Oh, so he put together Claude Debussy and Camille Saint-Saëns together into Impressions de France
at Epcot. And he also, if you watch the movie there, he's got about 10 scenes of his own music.
Yeah,
in the movie as well. So he did that. He also wrote the music for Tokyo Disney Sea, and he wrote for The Journey to the Center of Earth, which opened in 2001. Winnie the Pooh, He wrote for the theme park attraction. So the Winnie the Pooh attractions, he wrote the music for that.
Wow.
He's got a ton of work. I mean, he, like I said, he has since died 20 years ago, but he did receive Disney legend status for his work with Disney music. And he's probably a little bit before our time. So some of his movies were like The Apple Dumpling Gang, which is, that's a blast of the past.
I remember
right
watching that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that was wow, old that even then.
Yeah. So. And he also did, what was it? Great moments with Mr. Lincoln.
With Mr. Lincoln, yeah.
So that's Buddy Baker. So yeah. To say honorable mention, he probably should be up there.
He's on the map.
Yeah, he's on the map. So another guy, have you ever heard of Richard Bellis?
No.
Okay, let me read you some of his works. Let me play you one of his songs. So Richard Bellis, he arranged the music for the opening of Epcot.
Whoa.
Okay.
Okay.
He wrote for the original Star Tours and Indiana Jones attraction at Disneyland.
Oh,
my
wow.
Gosh.
This is Richard Bellis. He wrote at Disney World for the E.T. Alien Encounter, the Captain EO pre-show, Lights Motor Action Stunt Show.
Whoa.
That was his soundtrack.
I remember going to that.
But Richard Bellis, to me, Reflections of China Pavilion soundtrack.
Oh, that's a great soundtrack.
That's a great soundtrack. That is him. So Richard Bellis, in his own right, is an amazing, amazing composer, but has done a lot of work that you probably just don't realize that he has done for the parks. So, and the last one for me is Bruce Broughton. Am I pronouncing that right? Broughton. Bruce Broughton.
Broughton, that sounds
all right. So
possible.
Probably one of his most famous works is going to be Spaceship Earth. The soundtrack, Spaceship Earth, okay.
Yeah.
But he also did Soarin' Around the World.
Oh, okay.
Honey, I Shrunk the Audience soundtrack.
Okay. Yeah.
The Timekeeper, Ellen's Energy Adventure.
Goodness.
The Making of Me. Just, again, in his own right. A bunch of stuff. Because I have the Walt Disney World official album on my Apple playlist. So I'm like, who are these guys that are writing these songs? So I had to do a little research and just... These guys are absolutely a legend in their own right.
So I'm going to add one, and their contribution primarily is singular, but it is now worldwide because it's on both hemispheres, right? And that is my personal friends, Daft Punk. Actually, we're not friends. We've never met. And unfortunately, they're not together anymore, but you will know them from this music. So Daft Punk was the duo. They're a French duo, Thomas Bangalter and Guy-Manuel de Homem-Christo. They were the duo that was tabbed to write the score for Tron Legacy.
Man, that, just hearing that makes me want to go get on that ride right now.
Dude, I mean, I've mentioned this before, and I think we can't leave them off, especially since Tron was able to win this year's March Madness Disney World bracket altogether, right? It came in at the top. And so their sound now encapsulates an entire pavilion, effectively, right? You know, Tron is part of Tomorrowland, but the Tron pavilion is like... by itself as big as all of Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you get in there and you hear the music and you go through the ride and it's just part of it. Like you feel like you are here inside of it. I feel like it touched off something really big though, because when, you know, Tron was first created for Disney parks in China, they were looking for something other than the traditional Space Mountain experience. What was something that was going to speak to people over there? They love technology. They love innovation. They love thinking about the future. And I can't think of a composing duo that was able to pick up on the theme of a movie and incorporate music to such a degree that just so perfectly described what was going on there. And we're talking about taking humans and putting them in a digital world. And don't you just think that soundtrack exactly, you don't have to watch the movie. You can listen to it and you can picture it yourself, how that would work and how it would go. Got to give them a shout out. Now, by the way, that was, they worked nonstop on the Tron Legacy soundtrack from 2008 to 2011. That was all they did. They put other projects on hold. They did all sorts of stuff like that. You know, the duo has split up since, but hopefully at least one of them comes back for Tron Ares.
I hope so too, because Tron Legacy, I mean, it's one of my favorite soundtracks. Just from top to bottom, yeah, I can listen to the entire album and not get sick of it.
Yep.
I mean, to say it's beautiful, well, I think it's a beautiful soundtrack.
It is literally a work of art.
It's a work of art.
All right, so let's get to the hard part now. Maybe we wrap this up by calling it part of our magical scenario as well. So magical scenario is this. You have to now choose, or we have to choose, our Mount Rushmore of composers. So, you know, in the sports radio world, that means
four
people, right? Who are your top four?
Four people
best?
Or group.
Or group, yeah, groups. Yeah. So we have a couple that we've mixed together that did work together with each other, and so they're part of that group. So here we go. Top four composers. If it's all right, fellas, I'll go first, and I'll just take them right off the board, and that's Bob and Dick Sherman. I don't know how you could have a Disney Mount Rushmore of music and not have those guys on it.
Yeah, so what do? We each naming one, and then we got to agree on the fourth?
Yeah, let's do that.
So
let's
Dax is the Sherman Brothers?
Yeah, I'm saying the Sherman Brothers. Okay. I can't imagine you not. They just have had such a huge impact on the parks.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. And I think in my opinion, right up there with them is going to be another duo of Howard Ashman and Alan Menken. I think that right there next to it, right?
Yeah,
where the Sherman Brothers set it up at the very beginning, right? You know, Ashman and Menken were able to kind of bring it all back and kind of kick it off for the next generation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, you talk about like the influence of the princesses. I mean, Disney has its own line just called The Princesses.
The Princesses. Mm-hmm.
And it's all because of these two guys and putting together the music that they did. I mean, they're just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And for the record, that's who I was going to choose, Randy.
I know. That's why I jumped in there.
But just because I'm going down the list does not mean that this person does not deserve equal credit. I'm going to go with Randy Newman with his work on Toy Story, Cars, Monsters, Inc., A Bug's Life. I mean, you talk about some of the all-time great Pixar classics. This man has been behind the works of that. So, I mean, for me, Randy Newman is probably up there if we're talking about a Mount Rushmore of composers. So give me Randy Newman.
Okay. And so who are we coming with on the fourth? Do we have a consensus here? Because I think this is really hard, right?
Yeah. I mean, my top probably one or two would be between John Williams, Hans Zimmer, and Michael Giacchino. I don't know of those three who I would go with.
I think those are good names and probably some of the most exceptional film composers of our age. I don't know that I put them on the Disney Mount Rushmore just because the Disney ties, while influential, are a little more tangential. Particularly, you know, I mean, I think you can make an argument for John Williams. Obviously, with Indiana Jones, you know, you've got something there. It's hard to give him a lot of credit for the Star Wars to put that as a definitive Disney tie. But I could see it. You know, I wouldn't fight you over it. What are you thinking, Ryan?
I mean, you look at, you know, it's hard to argue with Williams. His you know, we've already talked about him. I think it's you could easily put him Hans Zimmer. Man, I mean, his work. I don't know. I mean, if you look at what they've done for Disney, I mean, the Lopez's, just with their work with Frozen, that because that's such an iconic movie that has spawned theme parks and lands.
Yeah.
And that probably will bring at some point come to our shores. We'll get a Frozen inspired land at some point, I hope.
Yeah, where did they just open Frozen? Was it Tokyo? I believe they opened in Tokyo, and then there's one coming in Paris. Frozen
yes.
Land.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's unbelievable. I think if we're just talking pure Disney influence, I'm prepared to change my vote.
But Zimmer did the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, man.
Another just classic soundtrack.
Yeah.
I just think...
This is a crowded mountain.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard.
Didn't Frozen like set the record for the highest number of sales of, I mean, I think Encanto has passed it now, but for a while there, Let It Go was the number one producing song for all of Disney ever, which is incredible. But yeah, the Lopez's are pretty tough to knock off that ledge.
I almost don't
for pure Disney influence.
Yeah, I think for pure Disney influence. But again, I mean, John Williams, Galaxy's Edge. I mean, that's, you'll find his music there. It's like, where do you draw the line?
All right, where are you going, Randy?
Yeah, you know, this is pretty tough to tell you the truth. I think that, I mean, you make a super super compelling argument for the Lopez's. That first Frozen film in 2013, you know, did almost $1.3 billion in the box office. That's an animated movie.
Everywhere. It was
animated movie, $1.3 billion. That was unheard of, right? And then Frozen 2 outgrossed that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know. I think that when we start talking about it and we start talking about the timeline of it, it really makes a lot of sense that, you know, if we start out there with the Sherman Brothers, right? If we start out with the boys, right?
Yeah.
And then you follow through to the Renaissance with, you know, Ashman and Menken there. And then you've got Randy Newman, which was a whole new version of it. It makes a lot of sense to put the Lopez's up there who have now kicked off this revival period, right? And are starting to bring it back. The influence in and of itself that puts them on the trajectory is probably worthy of a spot on the mountain.
Okay, let me backtrack for 1 second.
Come on.
I thought
we were settling this.
We're wrapping up the episode.
You look at Michael Giacchino's work.
It's amazing.
Zootopia, Up, Coco, and The Incredibles, Ratatouille, Space Mountain soundtrack. You talk about his influence in the parks. That's really hard to beat.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to argue that he has had as big of an influence
on
Pixar as Randy Newman. I would argue that, but I think, again, I like your thought process of like, okay, who really kicked it off and like created this style? I think the names we've mentioned are the names that did that, right? So Randy Newman, the Sherman Brothers, Alan Menken and Howard Ashman, and then the Lopez's, they all created this time frame or this
an era.
Where it just changed. It changed the way the whole trajectory of the industry, or not industry, but at least Disney's influence went, right?
I'm okay. I'm 100% okay with that list.
All right.
With this Mount Rushmore.
So that's it. No shade on any of these other composers whatsoever. They
couldn't
are
possibly.
Absolutely
couldn't possibly
phenomenal composers, but hope you guys enjoyed this show. It was fun for us to do the research and just listen to the music. If you're anything like us, you're listening to music as you commute to work or just Sunday afternoon having a lazy day, it's just always in the background. And so,
yeah, saving Mr. Banks, your lazy Sunday afternoons.
Yeah, we'll see.
Check it out, Randy.
You got it. You got to watch it.
We'll see.
It's a great show.
I'll let you know.
All right. Thanks, everyone. It's been a great show.
Bye.
Bye, guys.